prepare for liftoff. The rocket ship called the Carolina Outdoors is now in session. Welcome aboard, everyone, no matter how you're listening to this program, whether it be early on a Saturday morning via the airwaves of WBT Radio, or maybe you're subscribing to our podcast, Highlights of the Carolina Outdoors, wherever you listen and subscribe to podcasts. Oh yeah, lastly, jessebrowns.com. You can access us there. Your host, as well as the program, and as well as the mothership of Jesse Brown's Outdoors, a brick and mortar here in Charlotte, North Carolina, in the heart of the shopping district over in Sharon Corners, or of course there online. I'm your host, Bill Barty, on this side of your radio dial, and over on that side
is Christopher Lowing, back after a while.
After the suspension, we're glad that you are back. You spent your time in detention, and there's no holding you back
right
now.
And I'm better than ever.
That's right. Worked out all of those issues, took down all those signs, maybe put up a few as well.
I don't know. We're getting carried away, Bill.
Okay. Well, I do say that because besides hanging your hat at Jesse Brown's Outdoors, you're also the director and founder of the Charlotte Signs Project, which shows and shines a light on the historic signs that have made up the Charlotte area, but also kind of celebrates the history of the businesses and entities that made up those signs over time.
And we have quite a lot here in Charlotte, so it's a fun story to tell. And Jesse Brown's is a part of that story, clocking in at 53 years old this coming May.
That's right. That May 1st birthday is on the events calendar. Some other things that are on the events calendar are, besides the 53rd birthday, May 1st, is just before that, March 22nd. This will be right around spring break for many, right after, right before for others. We have kind of cordoned off the Fly Fishing Film Tours Charlotte event. That is held at the Visualite Theater, the historic Visualite Theater, which I think could be getting around 100 years old. I think it may be featured in your project along the way. But that's where the event Fly Fishing Film Tour is going to happen. We have live music starting at 5 p.m. The films start at 7 p.m. And I say films because this is not like a blockbuster movie that you go to a theater to sit and watch. This is several small, shorter films from 5 to 10 minutes in length, celebrating different places to fish around the world, all over the United States, and the filmmakers that brought these things forward. Some of them are human interest stories. Some of them are conservation stories. Some of them are just celebrating the beautiful places where fish live and where anglers love to go in search of catching these fish. We invite everyone to access tickets over at Jesse Brown's or the Visualite, or you can jump on the Carolina Outdoors webpage there at jessebrowns.com, and we'll have the link so that you can get a ticket. Who's invited? You don't just have to be a fly fishing aficionado for this. You can like travel, short films, independent films, fishing in general, maybe just a curiosity of what's happening in the fishing community, because all of them will be on hand that particular evening here in Charlotte. We'll talk more about it. We'll get some of the filmmakers on the Carolina Outdoors as we approach that March 22nd day. Something that's happening locally here, and you can go to Highlights of the Carolina Outdoors to hear about it, but the Short Track Winter Series is taking place down in Rock Hill. We had Neil Boyd on telling us about that, the Cask Winter Short Track Series. If you're a mountain biker, you'll need to check that out. That is definitely something to see and some place to be, whether you want to just have a good time in the mountain biking community or whether you want to see what your time is against some of the others. From beginners to expert, they're all going to be on hand down there. I think we have a few more Sundays with the Cask Track Series taking place.
Are you going to go down there, Bill, and do a little biking out there on the tracks?
I sure do want to. That's one of the things I did talk about with Neil during that conversation. It was my job to get my tire fixed. I have a flat tire on my bicycle, and it's got a hole in it because I can't find the hole. I think there may be a shard in my frame, because I've bought more than one.
That sounds tube. Painful.
Yeah. Well, what's painful is I'm a procrastinator and hadn't done it. So I'll do that. You may be holding me accountable. Something coming up, and we're going to talk about this on the Carolina Outdoors because it is appropriate. First off, we're going to go to the Carolina coast and find out about the fishing because right now is a great time to head to the coast. It has been pretty mild thus far. We're going to have a cold weekend, but we've had a great Carolina winter for the most part. We had a couple of little blasts, but they're so temporary. We're going to find out about the fish being schooled up a little bit, which makes it easy for us to locate them if we're sight fishing for fish, whether it be redfish or stripers, albacore, any of those kind of fish. They're schooled up and the fishing is good. Many times it'll cool off when it gets hot, and that is midsummer and then some. You have to change your style. So right now is a great time to be at the Carolina coast. We're going to talk a little bit about that. But before we do that, Christopher, let's delve into Valentine's Day.
That's right, Bill. You were talking earlier about the heart of South Park, which leads right into Valentine's Day because we have a lot of plans coming up for you.
Let's talk about that. But first, Christopher Lawing there, Bill Barty right here. The Carolina Outdoors is going to take a break, and we're going to come back and cover it all. Hey, it's Valentine's Day week for a lot of our listeners out there, those who are listening to us via the airwaves of WBT Radio on a Saturday morning. It definitely is coming up, and it's worth us talking about in the outdoor world, getting a little bit romantic or how to enjoy the outdoors with those that we love. If you're not listening to the Carolina Outdoors via the airwaves of WBT and you're listening to podcasts, these things will be something that you can utilize no matter the season. Welcome, everyone, to the Carolina Outdoors. Your host for this ride, on this side, Bill Barty.
And on this side, Christopher Lawing.
And Christopher, we have so many different people coming in to Jesse Brown's, and they're looking for something to do. And sometimes it's to get away and be by themselves and have time to recollect and you know, look inward, if you will. People use the outdoors for that all of the time. Self-healing, escape, whatever the words that go with that. For other times, it's a group of friends, buddies who are getting together, having fun. We've had people going on bachelor parties or bachelorette parties that are doing different adventures with their friends, a celebration of sort, a class reunion, just people who are like-minded to enjoy the outdoors. But then there's a third category, and there could be more, but to focus in on doing things outside with those that we love romantically. Even a date, it could be a hike, it could be a camping trip, it could be a backpacking journey, it could be a fly fishing trip. But Valentine's Day brings many of those topics to top of mind and gives us on the Carolina Outdoors a chance to talk about outfitting for those adventures over at Jesse Brown's and jessebrowns.com, but also to plant the seeds of idea for those who are looking for a little bit of that with the person that they love this time of year. So one good thing about the Carolinas, from the east to the Piedmont to the west, both Carolinas have a great geography of places to enjoy, you know, a sunset at the beach or a sunrise in the mountains and a good flat hike in between in the Piedmont. That's what we're going to talk a little bit about on this segment of the Carolina Outdoors. And Christopher, I don't know if you want to go first about planting some of those seeds where people can go and enjoy some of what we have here in the Carolinas during Valentine's Day.
Well, sure, Bill. Have you ever been up to the land of the sky, Asheville, North Carolina?
Oh, yeah, I do know. I do know Asheville.
That's a beautiful little spot, isn't it? But, you know, they have their historic downtown. They have the sprawling estate next to it, the famous Biltmore Estate of the Vanderbilt family.
Oh, yeah.
There's a ton of hiking trails and parks and ways to get outside in that area. It's just a beautiful space, and there's stuff to do year-round, whether it is go to Biltmore and do one of their, you know, stay at their historic inns and have a nice dinner, or maybe it's going to the brand-new Bohemian Hotel. I can't remember. What's it called? The Grand Bohemian Hotel that's in downtown Asheville. That's a beautiful hotel and rave reviews, good food, good times. But if you just want to walk around and explore and see the sights, there's a lot to do up there.
Well, and Asheville's grown up a whole lot, too. So they have one of the best independent restaurant scenes. So if you want to do that as well, or brew scenes, too, Asheville is a great escape.
Oh, yeah. And another thing that I'll tell you about that I love to do when I get up that way is to go to the French Broad Chocolate Lounge. That is a great spot. Get some chocolate.
Now, you may have to delve into this because what's triggering all of this is Valentine's Day. And what goes together with Valentine's Day better than flowers and chocolates?
That's right. That's right. You know, I'm sure there's some statistic out there that shows how much chocolate is sold during the year, and I bet holidays are right up there with Valentine's Day. But if you go into downtown Asheville, near where the old Vance Circle and Monument used to be, there's the French Broad Chocolate Lounge, and they have anything under the sun chocolatey that you could ever seek to want to order. They have desserts like eclairs and truffles. They have candies that they have made. They have hot chocolate. They have candied, you know, whatever that has cocoa in them. It's anything and everything. Drinks, food, candy, desserts, chocolate related. It's a chocolatier's heaven.
I love it. Okay, I've written this down. We'll have to put it in the liner notes of the Carolina Outdoors, too. You can find those over at jessebrowns.com. Just hit highlights of the Carolina Outdoors, and the write-up will be popping up right there beside it. I'm going to mention a place where there are plenty of waterfalls, and this is an area that I was not too far away from a couple of weeks ago. We talked about it here on the Carolina Outdoors, the Brevard area, or more close to Roswell, North Carolina. I had the opportunity to go up and do a little fishing on the East Fork of the French Broad River. It's a great delayed harvest trout stream. If you're heading up there, and we're going to talk about this, it's a great place where fish are stocked. You can't keep the fish, at least not October through May. You have to let them go. So I was releasing the fish that I caught, but you park right there beside the stream and jump right in and you're fishing. Again, that's the East Fork of the French Broad River in Rosman, North Carolina, outside of Brevard. Because what I want to talk about are waterfalls. We're going to come back to fishing, but a place where you can't take your automobile in. You have to walk in, and they have beautiful waterfalls, DuPont State Forest. And I wanted to name a few of the falls that you will see there. Of course, it's a 10,000-acre state forest with plenty to see, a part of the old DuPont corporate land that has been saved into a state recreational forest. They have easy enough hiking trails so you can enjoy a 3-mile round trip hike to three waterfalls. And I'm going to name those falls because if you are with someone on Valentine's week, and again, that's what's triggering this conversation, but do not feel limited. If the weather's bad on Valentine's Day or you have to work or can't get away to Brevard or to this area, then you can delay it. It does not have to be a romantic hike, but it ends up being one because I said waterfalls. The Hooker, the Triple, and High Falls are all within DuPont State Recreational Forest. Again, I mentioned that 10,000 acres. The forest is open from 5 a.m. to 10 p.m. Let me talk a little bit about the High Falls. It's a 150-foot waterfall in the middle of the nature sanctuary called DuPont. It's one of the most impressive North Carolina waterfalls, and it's about a little over one mile round trip hike to see from where you're parking. You can walk or bike to other waterfalls from the High Falls. One of them would be the 3 mile waterfall hike. It is so named because it's 3 miles, a moderate hike, and it's one of the most popular, the 3 mile waterfall hike. It will also take you to Hooker Triple and the previously mentioned High Falls. That's a place where you can go take a picnic and enjoy, but be forewarned because on Saturdays, on weekends, that's where a lot of the people will be congregated. So DuPont State Recreational Forest does get visitors, especially on the weekends.
And one of those falls that you may have just mentioned, Bill, is very Valentine's Day themed. Its name is the Bridal Veil Falls. And so that's a very love-themed attraction, a beautiful fall. Another place that I'll mention that's up in the North Carolina mountains that has a nice love story theme to it is the Blowing Rock. Have you ever been to Blowing Rock, North Carolina?
You know what, I have, but for benefit, the voice you hear there, Christopher Law, and I'm Bill Barty. This is the Carolina Outdoors. You're about, I think, to hear the story of the Blowing Rock and the lore and legend that involves why the wind comes up there at Blowing Rock and how it was named. Christopher, do tell our Carolina Outdoor listeners how this happened.
Well, what's pretty cool about this place, and not only because since around 1933, the Blowing Rock has been proclaimed North Carolina's oldest travel destination and attraction, but the legend has it that two individuals, one from the Cherokee tribe and one from the Catawba tribe, way back, long ago, were walking along that craggy ridge where the Blowing Rock is held, and the man, the gentleman, the warrior, went on to duty. He said, "I need to go back to my tribe. I need to go go back to my call of duty." And so he leapt off of the Blowing Rock to return to his tribe. And the grief-stricken maiden prayed to the Great Spirit to bring him back. And the sky was a rending sky, and a gust of wind blew her lover back onto the rock and into her arms. And as legend has it, from that day forward, a perpetual wind has blown up onto the rock from the valley below. It offers a beautiful surround vista of the valley floor and the mountains around. So it's a very heartwarming and good ending love story about two lovers long ago.
And of course, that is Blowing Rock, North Carolina. The town that is named for, and that is one of the nearest mountain towns to Charlotte. So if you're in the Charlotte area, it's a pretty quick and easy ride up 321 to Blowing Rock.
And there's so much to do in that town as well. There's great little restaurants. I know there's a number of art galleries. So it's a very quaint, fun, nice little laid out town to just walk around and explore, even if you don't have anything on your agenda to do.
It's Valentine's week. We're talking about Valentine's places to go here on the Carolina Outdoors with Bill Barty and Christopher Lyne. And Christopher, speaking of, you mentioned Bridal Veil Falls in DuPont State Forest. That's a 4.4 mile round trip hike, a beautiful 120 foot waterfall. They do have wedding parties and ceremonies at the Blowing Rock. So you can do an intimate bridal luncheon for 25 people, or a larger ceremony and reception for over 50 people. And that is all at the Blowing Rock.
Wow.
So it can get romantic quickly, not just from the lore and legend of that story that you told, but also in current times as well.
Let's plan a wedding. That sounds fun. Who's up?
Everybody's waving off here in Studio D. Right now, we're all waving off, but we do hope that you will take on some kind of activity, outdoor activity, with the one you love for Valentine's Day or beyond. One of the most popular that we have going on at Jesse Brown's. We outfit for any of these mountain excursions, coastal excursions, or excursions in between in regards to outfitting. But we also have a great lead guide and instructor with other guides and instructors under him, Dave Bergman, who is teaching people the sport of fly fishing. And that is a sport that you can take to learn foundationally how to do it, what to do, and where to do it. But then after you garner that introduction through the Streamside tutorial that Dave offers and we offer at Jesse Brown's, a wading trip, then you can take the sport wherever you want to take it. And let me let you know that trout, for sure, don't live in ugly places. They are all in beautiful places. So whether you're taking them to the Blowing Rock area or the Asheville area or the Rosmond or Brevard area, all of those places have trout streams in them or nearby them, and you can enjoy your time with each other while you are learning nature, enjoying the water, the babbling brooks, the waterfalls, and then you are working with your loved one at catching fish, releasing the fish, and trying to catch another one. And that's been a big deal for us at Jesse Brown's, especially as we slowly move closer to spring. People will be doing more and more of those outdoor activities like fly fishing, learning fly fishing together. And it's much easier to do it with your instructor than it is for you to teach each other. Because if you're teaching each other the sport, you may not love each other at the end.
And you might learn bad habits. And we don't like bad habits. We want you fishing right.
We like a few bad habits, though, don't we?
Oh.
Just a few. He's Christopher Line. I'm Bill Barty. We're going to find out a little bit about fishing at the coast with a fly rod or without after we take a quick break here. We'll be back after this on the Carolina Outdoors. Hey, the Carolina coast fills up with people during the warm weather months. Of course, we know when school lets out and people are doing family vacations, June, July, August, into Labor Day in September. But we're going to talk about the cooler weather months and what's happening and why that's a good time to be at the Carolina coast, especially for those who like the sporting life. Welcome, everyone, to the Carolina Outdoors. Whether you're joining us via the airwaves of WBT Radio early on a Saturday morning as we blast up and down the Eastern Seaboard, or whether you're joining us via podcast at Highlights of the Carolina Outdoors, we welcome you all aboard. So back to the cooler weather months as we make our way through February, and right up ahead comes March. The Swansboro area of the North Carolina, Eastern North Carolina, is what we're going to focus in on. And we're going to talk a little bit about what we can do there and why this is a good time of the year to be there. And Christopher, I'm going to let you join in and tell us kind of where Swansboro is and the water and towns that are accessible from there.
Sure. Oh, well, it's a beautiful area. And for those who may not know, we're talking down on the North Carolina coast. Probably you would say south of Morehead City, but the way it's all laid out, technically you're west of Morehead City, really close to Emerald Isle. You're above Surf City, certainly above Wilmington. Sneed's Ferry gets you close. So any of those names should get you in the general proximity of where the beautiful area town of Swansboro is. Cedar Point's also a familiar name that's right nearby too. So if you want to head down to the water and the coast, that's where you need to set your GPS.
Well, we're going to get a little insight in to tell us the secrets of this. We're going to bring on from Tailing Tide Guide Service, Captain John Mauser's on the line. He's going to give us a bird's eye view of what's happening down there, or maybe I should say a water's edge view. Captain John Mauser, welcome to the Carolina Outdoors.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me on.
I guess I got it right. You know, it gets crowded down there in many of our other towns in both Carolinas at the coast. But right now, tell us what's happening with anglers, visitors to the area, and with the fish in that area, John.
Yeah, so I guess what I would say is, you know, February and then coming into next month, March, that's kind of the end or the second half of our wintertime fishery. You know, I feel like we start fishing wintertime types of fish and fisheries, you know, sometime December around Christmas time, and it lasts on through January, February, and March. And then March is kind of that transition getting ready for that springtime fishery as other species show back up in North Carolina and the bait comes back. So basically what I've been doing the last month and what I'll be doing the next month and a half while it's still wintertime is focusing on sight fishing redfish. That's honestly 98% of what we're doing right now. There's still some speckled trout around. There's black drums, sheep's head to be caught, sea mullet are starting to show back up. But the big thing for me as far as fly rod anglers and anglers who are trying to sight fish on spin is the red drum fishery. And basically what happens is in the wintertime down here on the Crystal Coast, the water gets cold and it gets really clear. The algae dies off, and the water turns sometimes as clear as an in-ground swimming pool. It gets really clean and allows us to sight fish these fish. And then the other cool thing that happens is all these redfish or red drum that, you know, in the summer and fall and spring are spread out throughout the marsh, they start huddling up in certain areas. The best way I can say it is, you know, 90% of the fish are in 10% of the marsh in the wintertime. So, you know, there's a lot of dead space, but when you find those drum, you might find a school of 20, you might find a school of 400, you know, sitting up in 10, 12, 15 inches of water, crystal clear water, and it really allows for some cool sight fishing opportunities. So that's, you know, one of those redfish we catch 12 months a year, but it's a real neat focus point, you know, in, you know, from basically New Year's on through the end of March, where you can sight fish these large schools of fish in clear water, shallow. It's one of the most visual types of fishing I think you can do in the state throughout the year.
I think I'm going to give you a very difficult challenge right now, because on the Carolina Outdoors, we talk, in fact, in at Jesse Brown's Outdoors, we talk a lot about trout fishing, going up freshwater, you know, working a drift on a stream, babbling brook, and that sort of thing. You know, you may have your strike indicator floating along with it, and oftentimes we talk about bass fishing, where they have fish finders and electronics, technology that's helping you look into the water, gauging the depth of the water, and then getting your lure, your bait, your whatever down to where the fish are. Will you talk about the experience of sight fishing for reds and what it is like? And to help it along, I guess, John, I'd say it's a bit like hunting. You are out there trying to look and see and spot before then comes the pressure of placing that cast in front of the fish.
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess first I'll say what it's not. It's not, you know, in the summertime, there's a lot of blind fishing, blind casting, whether you're fishing fly or spin, you know, and you're covering water and you're casting to points and little, you know, creek mouths and places that look like they would have fish, or you're waiting for a push or a wake on the surface to kind of give you a sign of fish. In the wintertime, it's the opposite. Since that water is so clear, there's very little blind casting for fish. And since those fish are, you know, congregated in certain areas, really shallow, back behind bars and, you know, humps in the sand that kind of protect dolphins and other predators from getting in to eat them in the wintertime, you know, there's a lot of dead space that you have to search. So there is, it's like hunting. There's a lot of scouting. There's a lot of stalking, trying to find those fish. So once you put your time in, you know, and you start to find them, the good news is that those fish will stay in those areas if they're not pressured too much, you know, for weeks, sometimes months at a time. So you can find your own little groups of fish, and hopefully nobody else pressures them, and you can go in there and go back and forth with those fish. So basically when you come in, you may, you know, push up a creek or a bay, and you could spend, you know, cover two-thirds of the bay and not see a single thing, and you come around the corner, and if it's calm enough and shallow, you may see them waking, but you're visually seeing fish. So in the wintertime, a lot of these redfish aren't actually red. They're more silver, almost like fishing for bonefish in the Bahamas or the Keys. But they have those vibrant blue tails on them, and you can see that. So, you know, you're hoping for sunshine. You're hoping for calm winds, and you're hoping that that you can get on these fish in that shallow water and see them. And, I mean, sometimes you'll come around the corner and literally see, you know, gosh, I don't know, like 100-foot by 100-foot section of just redfish, just boiling around and pushing back and forth. And they may go from one point to another. And, you know, and you can sit back and you can watch those fish and pattern them. Because when that water's that clear, they're very, very aware of what's around them. So your job is to physically, you need to stay outside of that bubble of what scares them, but be able to put a fly inside that bubble of what they eat. So it's this game of, you know, stalking them, trying to make them think that they find the lure, the fly that you present to them without them knowing that you're there. And so there, you know, it's some technique and some effort and some thought that has to go into that. And sometimes we see those fish and we just watch them cruising around for a couple minutes before we even try to approach them. Because the good thing about having a school of fish like that in clear water is that it can cause some competition. So, you know, if those fish are hungry and you throw a fly in there, they may fight over that fly. At the same time, the bad part of having a school of fish like that is that if you scare one of them real bad, he'll turn around and he'll scare his other 50 or 100 buddies.
He tells everybody.
All go running. Yeah, exactly. So there's a lot of work and effort to it. It's sometimes it feels like a game of chess with those fish. You definitely, most of the time, you definitely earn them because you have to be sneaky and figure these fish out and pattern them. And sometimes you're casting 20 feet ahead of them. Sometimes you're waiting till the school moves away and you're throwing a fly behind their tail because you watched them and patterned them. And, you know, every 30 seconds they swing and they come back and you're just setting up a trap with your fly. So there's work that goes into it. But at the same time, it can also be the best fishing you'll ever do numbers-wise. Because when you do find them there and you find a happy school, you know, it's not just one fish and then you go on looking for other ones. You know, you got a bunch more there. So, you know, some days are a little bit tougher in the winter, but some days are I have a lot of anglers that fish with me and leave after seeing that, and they say that was the coolest thing they've ever seen as far as fishing goes. So.
Dude, your description is super cool here on the Carolina Outdoors. You're making my heart skip a beat. The weekend's going to be here, is here, and we're going to have to enjoy a little bit of what those fish are doing when they're schooling up. The voice you hear over there, Captain John Mauser from Tailing Tide Guide Service. He's giving us a breakdown of the eastern North Carolina coast inshore-wise and the redfish getting it all together.
John, I bet you are like a kid in a candy shop every time you come around one of those corners and see those fish, see them in all that water. I bet your clients, too. I bet your clients are just loving every moment that they're out on a tour with you.
Sometimes I have to apologize after the fact because I don't think they realize how excited a guide can still be about something that they see all the time. But, you know, it never gets old. It's always changing. It's always challenging. And, like, the anticipation is constantly building. And when those fish are there, they're there. You know, you're not seeing anything. You're completely not expecting them, and the next thing you do, you turn your head over your left shoulder, and here comes 100 fish that are 60 feet away from you, and now they're 50 feet, now they're 40 feet, and you got the guy on the front of the boat who's trying to, like, you know, break that trance he's in to throw a fly out in front of them. So I think it catches a lot of the anglers off guard the first time they do it because it's not what they expect. They don't expect to, you know, all of a sudden see a massive wave of fish coming right at the boat. But, you know, once they kind of blow a few shots and start to understand it, they learn a little bit from every fish they cast too and blow. They, you know, eventually they'll put it together and they start catching a few, but it's a ton of fun. And when you hook one on fly, you know, you can watch the rest of the school. It might scatter, it might circle around, or, you might have 10 or 20 other fish that try to swim with the fish you've hooked. So it's always different. It's always exciting. It never gets boring.
Well, and it shows, too, for those out there who are interested, and we'll tee up your website here in a little bit, but there's a photography and video section on that website, and everybody, it seems, has a smile, and they're holding up something big, and they clearly are thrilled with what they've just come off the water doing. So I know y'all have a blast, but talk a little bit about that. Did you mention you have a photography side of things? Do you like to dabble in that world?
Yeah, so most of my anglers know me as a photographer who basically shoots angler portraits. So I try to, you know, do as much as I can for them to not just photograph that hero shot of them holding a redfish or an albacore or whatever we're hunting, but, you know, to get those shots as they cast to the fish or as they fight the fish and try to get them, you know, some good release shots. And I'm the kind of guy who doesn't mind jumping out of the boat to try to get them a shot, hanging over the boat, releasing it, you know, if that's something that they can look back on, you know, 5 years later down the road and remember that trip. But my big thing now that I fish as much as I do, like fishing used to kind of be my escape. So now wildlife photography is. So I've spent the last few years, basically all my free time that I have in the woods with a camera. So instead of hunting fish, I'm hunting bears and alligators and deer and birds and all that stuff. So that's kind of my second passion, and it kind of bleeds over into the fishing side of it too. So I've never taken pictures to the point that it lessens my angler's ability to catch fish, but once they hook up, I'm going to make sure I get a couple good shots for them to remember it by.
Well, before we move on, I probably need to get you, because you're very active on social media, will you give out your Instagram handle so we can check out those pictures as well?
Sure. So I got a couple of them. So the one for the guide service is just Tailing Tide. And then for the wildlife photography, it's just John Mauser, M-A-U-S-E-R, photo.
Easy enough. Tailing Tide or John Mauser photo. And that's who we're talking to here on the Carolina Outdoors. John, we're running low on time, but I wanted to bring you a little bit inland because we're getting close to a different season. And I want to find out, if you're still doing this, of course, you're one of the most demanded for, best, and well-known guides in North Carolina salt. But as we move into spring, there is a shad, and then after the shad, a striper run that takes place on the Roanoke River up towards Weldon. Are you still guiding on that water? And can you give us a little insight about that shad run when it first starts before the striper come?
Sure thing. So, you know, all of North Carolina's major rivers, the Tar, the Neuse, the Roanoke, the Cape Fear, they all have different shad runs, and a lot of them have striped bass runs also. They vary. Some are start as early as February and some, you know, as late as April. The Roanoke River, the upper Roanoke River around Weldon or Roanoke Rapids, North Carolina, I think both for shad and striped bass is one of the best fisheries that anglers can experience in the state. So generally, on the upper Roanoke River around Weldon, the shad start showing up in good numbers mid-March, and they stay there for through the first or second week of April. And usually when the shad are starting to finish spawning and go back downriver, say mid-April, it's about the time that the striped bass are starting to peak in that same area. So there's a little bit of overlap as the shad are leaving and the stripers are coming. The best striped bass fishing is going to be the last 2 weeks of April and the first 2 weeks of May. And, of course, that varies some depending on water temp and things like that. But generally what I do every year is I spend a few weeks up there for stripers. But this year, something I haven't done in a few years, I'm going to go up there and do 4 or 5 days of shad charters. So we'll be up there the last couple of days of March, first couple of days of April, taking anglers fishing for shad. And then I'll be going back up there around the 22nd of April, and then I'll be up there through May 10th or so doing striped bass charters. You know, just the Roanoke River is, you know, like any other place. Like, you've got days where, you know, you can have bad weather or the bite's tough. But in general, both the shad and striper bite there, even on a slow to kind of midday, it's better than most anywhere else you can experience it. And both those fisheries have kind of become legendary for, you know, 100 fish days. It's not that way all the time. I mean, some days you go out there and you may catch 15 or 20 fish. But anytime you can go catch 15 or 20 striped bass on fly in a couple hours, yeah, it's pretty exceptional. But, you know, last year we had a couple evenings where during the striped bass season we did over 100 fish like 3 or 4 days in a row just in, you know, a couple hour period in the evening on top water. So when it's slow, it's good. And when it's good, it's amazing. So I try to go up there every year because I love the change. I love fishing that fishery and, you know, hearing the turkeys and seeing the trees bloom and staying bowed up on fish.
Oh, I love it. I love it. Now, you just took us through right now, really through April with your fishing season and what you have going on. This is a very general question, and we've got the website up, TailingTideGuideService.com, but you are in demand. Is there a certain time of week that we could look towards you having an opening that we could jump in on the book? Or can you give us advice how to hook it up with you where you are fishing every day and are already booked many days?
Sure. I've been real blessed the last year or two. Like the guide service has grown a lot. It depends seasonally. There are times when you, believe it or not, might be able to call me a week before in the summertime, and I still have a day or two open to go fishing for red drum in the summer. And then at the same time, like certain seasons, like the false albacore season in the fall, it usually, you know, I can book that out, you know, 6 months to a year in advance. So it just depends on what anglers want to do. The easiest thing to do if they want to go fishing, my phone number is on the website and email. So feel free to call me and we can, I love to discuss with any angler, like specifically what they want to do and get out of a fishery. And if they have a certain time frame that they want to fish, because I just want to make sure that I can give them the best experience possible. So, you know, sometimes certain things you might want to book it a few months in advance, and some things you might be able to call me the week before and something's open. So, but all that information's on the website, and I look forward to talking to anybody. I'd love to, you know, show them what I get to do every day.
Proof is in the pudding, and back to that photography. Your clients do have the best looking fish pictures, but that's because you are usually on camera for taking those pictures. Captain John Mauser, thank you so much again for sharing all that you have going on and especially encouraging us to head out and check out Tailing Tide Guide Service and do a little North Carolina saltwater fishing.
Hey, I really appreciate the support, guys. Thank you so much for having me on, and I look forward to talking to you again soon.
There he goes, Captain John Mauser, and off we go. But just for a moment, Christopher Law and Bill Bartee, we're going to come back and wrap up this edition of the Carolina Outdoors.
News Talk 1110 99.3 WPT.
One, two, Carolina Outdoors is in session, but we have to say farewell. But before we do, let's review.
Let's review, Bill. We covered the Carolinas from the mountains to the coast, from Valentine's Day activities to fishing activities.
That's right. We can go to the chocolate place in Asheville, or we can go see waterfalls in DuPont State Recreational Forest.
That's right. Or go up to the Blowing Rock in Blowing Rock.
Or we can head for the North Carolina coast, head east
to Swansboro.
That's right, in surrounding areas, and Tailing Tide Guide Service will take us out there and catch fish and then make a pretty picture out of it as well.
Oh, yeah, of course.
And don't forget to contact us over at Jesse Brown's Outdoors, because we have wading trips that are in effect, teaching the sport of fly fishing to those who want to learn the sport of fly fishing, checking that box, that bucket list, if you will, to go out and not just fish, but to take a fly rod, a line, rod, reel, and put it together with your energy and the environment featuring the babbling brooks of a North Carolina stream, and putting a fly out there and hopefully tricking that fish into taking it. But we're not taking them home necessarily. We're going to release them, revive them, and send them back to be caught another time. Christopher, we're glad to have you over there in that seat, sharing everything that you have going on, whether it be from Blowing Rock to the Charlotte Science Project that we run. We invite people to come over there to Jesse Brown's to check you out.
Yeah, check me out. And Bill, too.
You can check me out, too. I'll be there on hand or at jessebrowns.com. For those of you listening to the Carolinas, we have a discount code for online.
That is TAKE10FEB, TAKE10FEB.
For Christopher Lawing, thanks to Tailing Tide Guide Service, John Mauser. For TJ, the DJ Box, this is Bill Barty saying make the Carolina outdoors better than you found it and pick up your trash.
Trash, 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 trash.